Good morning, Feel Great Cafe listeners. This is Steve from Feel Great Coaching, and I feel great. And I'm here to help you feel great, too. This radio show is called the Feel Great Cafe because I want it to be a radio show that is in a relaxed environment where you can kick back, grab a cup of coffee, listen, learn, and hopefully even participate in the process of helping you feel great. And as in all great cafes, you have more than one option on the menu. The options on our menu are motivation, positive mindset, wellness, and the law of attraction. The special for today is wellness. Today is Wednesday, October 14th, 2009, and my special guest is Michael Cavallaro. Michael is a teacher, consultant, speaker, and author. Among his writings is the popular book, The 55 Concepts, A Guide to Conscious Living, as well as a forthcoming book called Ramblings, Wisdom for Life. He is founder of the Metaphysical Mentoring Institute and Mastering the Art of Being Human, teaching practical spiritual tools for life. His work about assisting others in experiencing their inner light and finding joy in their existence through straightforward, practical, and functional processes. Welcome to the cafe, Michael.
Thank you.
That sounds like that is an interesting background you've got there. So before we get started, if you'd like to share with the audience why you wanted to be a guest on the show and get your message out.
It's mostly about getting the message out, excuse me, to make people's lives easier, to make it functional. A lot of questions going on with belief systems and ideas out there, and making it practical was really the purpose of coming on here and sharing with people that it really doesn't have to be complex, doesn't have to be very hard.
No, okay, very cool. Well, I know it might have been a couple months ago, I had Nancy Baker on the group, and she had touched on the 55 concepts, and then I found that was really interesting and intriguing, and we got lots of feedback from that show, and that's why one of the reasons why having you, the author, come on is just a great thing to happen. So could you just share with us why you wrote the book and how it got started?
Well, I wrote the book simply, again, to make practical reasons for people to get through things. It doesn't have to be very complex. It doesn't have to be too heady, if you will. And it was about a 30-year process of working with people and doing a process that I call mentoring. Mm-hmm. And in that mentoring, discovering a lot of common difficulties that all human beings have, no matter what culture they're in and no matter what language they speak. I've even worked with people that don't speak English and have worked the same process effectively.
Wow. Now that must be challenging.
Yes, it was quite interesting.
Yeah. So you've created these 55 concepts, and I know from before, like, just want to jump in and hear what some of them are, and if you could give some examples and some of the top ones that come to mind to you, and just share some examples of that, and we'll take it from there.
Sure. Some of them, what you'll find is when you hear them, a lot of people will say, oh, these sound familiar, I've heard these before. So some of the ideas in general are ancient wisdom just recalibrated for today's culture. Mm-hmm. And it's learning to take them in a different way and really learning how to live them rather than just think about them, and that makes the big difference in your life. So one of the first ones I'll share is anything that bothers you is your issue.
Okay.
And this is things that trouble you in your life about the way other people are doing things is related directly to your own belief system, your own belief structure, and the way that you perceive you're supposed to behave or the way that you have behaved in the past. And let me just say a little bit about beliefs. Basically, beliefs are patterned behaviors that you've learned since birth, even since conception. And these patterned behaviors become an unconscious recording that are basically your autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see somebody behave in a specific way, you'll respond to it based upon these ideas.
Right.
So an example being, I worked with a client once, and I was sitting in the chair, and I was thinking about what was going on, and this was a face-to-face meeting. And as I was thinking, I kind of was looking up out of the corner of your eye. You know how you do when you think about things.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, immediately this person started yelling at me. And I said, what are you talking about? And they said, you know what I'm talking about. And I said, no, I don't understand. And they said, stop this, stop that. I really didn't understand. And then I finally got the person to tell me what was bothering them. They said, well, you rolled your eyes at me. And I said, well, what does that mean to you? And after we got through that, it was basically that growing up, their father, whenever they would talk to them in disgust or disdain, they would roll their eyes and give a sigh and really make them feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so this triggered that memory in them.
Oh, yeah.
So it really wasn't me rolling my eyes. It was their issue about what they thought rolling your eyes meant.
Right, right. And then you have processes that get them through that reaction. I guess that's what you're the reaction or their perception of that.
Yes. Okay. And basically we teach them over a process. In the beginning, you can't learn it immediately, but as the process goes, we teach you how to, discharge that stuff for yourself in a way that's permanent rather than just temporarily thinking positive or overlooking it.
Hmm. Okay.
And, that's a little much to go over in the show, the processes, but, we can talk a little bit more. Like, in that, what we have, there's a couple other concepts that relate to that. And one is you can't see what you don't know. You see the things in life through your own filters, the way that you believe they are. You have had to experience them in some way, shape, or form prior to an event in order to be able to judge them. You can't judge what you don't know.
Right, right. So, like the saying, someone looks through rose-colored glasses and so they're always in a, positive mood. They're always looking positive stuff. So it's that filter. Like for that person, it's rose-colored glasses. For someone else, it could be something different. And
right.
That's affecting their perspectives on different things. Or is it just like each situation is in its own?
As a rule of thumb, it's your whole life is seen through those filters based upon certain triggers.
Okay.
And it could be all the time for some people, and it's varied for everybody. Some people it could only be when someone does roll their eyes at you. Other times it could be just anybody who says anything you don't like now becomes sort of disdainful or hostile, if you will.
Right. I was always told, I'm going way back, that when someone is in your presence and you're in a conversation and their arms are folded in front of them, that they're not agreeing with what you're saying, or they're putting up some kind of wall blockage and stuff like that. So I try to be conscious of that when I'm face-to-face with people discussing, but sometimes you just want to do that. You just want to fold your arms. But is that the type of thing when someone, you're in a conversation face-to-face, they fold their arms in front of you, that could trigger a reaction to somebody?
Yes, that could just trigger a reaction. And in my experience, body language is not necessarily accurate, all those stories. A lot of times, like you said, some people just want to fold their arms. But
right.
If you've been programmed and bought into the idea that when they do that, they're becoming, we'll say, resistant,
right.
You will respond that way, and it isn't necessarily true. The best way that I've found, and one of the tools I give people, is just to ask them. If you have a consideration that they're closing off to you, just ask them. The simple thing is ask people about what they're doing, and then then it's clear.
Well, that would mean that we have to openly communicate, and I don't know if everybody does that out there.
Yeah, that would be a pretty dangerous thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, I have found that, the key to, relationships in general and stuff is communication, and I'm sure that goes with everything, and what you're saying, I just ask, what you're feeling, and that's it comes down to the basic thing of of communication and stuff like that. All right, you have any other concepts you'd like to share with us and discuss that?
Yes, for one of the ones that I like in relationships, and especially if you have children of any sort,
mm-hmm.
Avoid yelling at all costs.
Okay.
What happens when you raise your voice and you begin to yell, most people shut down immediately.
Right.
There are usually perceptions of lack of worth or that they're not good enough, unloved, or that somehow they're being rejected by you. Whether it's true or not, this is a common human interpretation. And if you can imagine any time that you've yelled at somebody, just look at how they respond. It's very few people are warm and welcoming when you start to scream at them.
Now what happens if you don't? The person doesn't, like, let's say it's two adults, and the person doesn't yell back, and they're calmly listening and maybe nodding or agreeing or talking with them. Does that counter that, or what do you do? What do you suggest for people that are in that situation?
On the end of being the receiver of yelling?
Yeah.
It is best if you do something like you said, but internally you're going to process. So you have to be conscious of how you're processing the yelling.
Mm-hmm.
Is it making you feel defensive? Is it making you feel less than, or that your idea isn't good enough, or that you're not good enough? That's a very common human belief system, is that they're not good enough.
Yeah, that thought there comes up. Over and over in the different shows that I've done with different topics, different themes, but it comes back to where so many people out there don't feel that they're good enough.
Yeah, I've found that that's probably the top most common belief system in all human beings.
Hmm.
It's not good enough at some level, either not good enough for your parents, not good enough for God or creator, whatever you want to call it. All these beliefs about mistakes and errors and wrongness, about the way you should behave, all these things play into that belief system and are reinforced in many areas because it's a good way to manipulate people into certain structures when there's powers that be, let's say, that are interested in certain outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you work with people on that? When they have that thought process that I'm not, this is what I want, but I don't feel I'm good enough, or they may not even verbalize that I'm not good enough, but you can read into what they're saying that they're not good enough. Do you work with people like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what you find is that this is really one of the main causes for the lack of abundance, as people are looking for this abundance issue these days.
Yeah. Yes.
Lack of abundance really at one of the core levels is that not feeling good enough. So you can manage it and overcome that with positive thought and certain behaviors, but that's only temporary because the ultimate belief system is still at the root.
Right.
And so a lot of people find that once they overcome that for a while and they slide back and they don't have quite as much, or they're struggling again, this is ultimately because that belief system is in there. And yes, we work with those kind of situations in order to bring you about to a place where it's constant and it's not fluctuating.
Hmm. Wow, that in itself is just a great accomplishment. If you can get people to start believing that they are worthy and stuff like this. And I know, like, going back to, go back to, like, my mom. Like, she always asked for her daily bread, and that was it. She didn't want any more. And when I talked to her about, like, you can have more and stuff, she's like, I don't know if I, you know, this is good enough for me, and this is all I want. And I could tell that she's feeling that she wasn't worthy of having all, you know, abundance. And getting by was fine with her, and she didn't want to take from anybody else, you know.
Yeah.
But she felt like if she had more, she was taking from somebody else. So she just wanted to live a happy life and get by. Now, I guess I'm talking along the same lines as you are?
Yeah. It's what you're talking about is a little category I put it in called the just enough system.
Okay. Just enough, right? Yeah.
Always have just enough and just get by. You never have more, you never have less, but you always have just enough. But boy, is that a constant struggle.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's I notice it's not just, I mean, it's okay, but it's not good, and we want to enjoy our life, and that's like you were saying in the beginning, you're here to help people to enjoy their life. And, you know, we're on this earth for so long. Let's make the best of it.
Yeah, it's tough to enjoy life when you're in a constant struggle.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Okay, any other concepts you'd like to share with us? And maybe
there's a couple key ones. One that I really like to point out is people don't do things to you. They do things for themselves. Oftentimes people see somebody, let's say somebody steals your purse, and you're upset because you've been invaded and somebody's been in your space and it was all about you. It really isn't about you. You happen to be there. The thing that it's about is the person wanted what was ever or what they believed was in your purse, whether it was money or cigarettes or anything. So they're after something that serves their purpose. There's this little key to human beings, and all human beings in their pattern behavior, not their higher qualities, but in their pattern behavior, all human beings do things to serve themselves always. They have a belief system, like let's say the person who stole the purse believed they were in lack, they didn't have enough, so they would steal your purse. If that person had more than enough, they wouldn't even consider your purse. They would just buy stuff, you know, that they need.
Right.
So it's about their own perceptions and their own limitations that they do things. So even when people, quote, hurt your feelings, it isn't because they're really trying to hurt their feelings. It's because they believe you've done something to them, and their pattern is to retaliate. Their pattern is to manipulate. And what we have to understand is that human beings, all human beings, aren't bad, and they don't really do bad things. They do things that are self-serving based upon the poor programming they received as children.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does go back to that, because as you're saying that, I'm thinking like when I was a kid and people would make the boy, you know, boys, what boys will be boys, teenagers, and they make fun of other people and they pick on stuff, and parents always said, you know, it's because they're trying to make themselves feel better by putting you down and stuff. And
yes.
I guess as children, they grow up into adults, and it continues.
Yes. And it's ongoing. What you have to understand is that when those people try to put you down, you can't go down or feel down unless you already believe that you're not worthy or not good enough.
Sure, sure. So it goes back
to that. Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say it goes back to that concept of not being good enough again.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, if somebody calls you, you know, a dog, and you know you're not a dog, you're not going to get too upset.
Right, right.
So, you know, you have to kind of have already in somewhere, unconsciously at the least, have these certain beliefs about yourselves and judgments you've made. And those judgments come from all the things that you've heard growing up and that you respond to based upon people's acceptance and people's rejections as you perceive it.
Mm-hmm. So basically, I mean, it comes down to that quote, and I don't know who said it, but life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you react to it. And what you're doing is teaching them to react in a positive, healthy way so they can enjoy their life. Is that accurate?
On that one, I'm going to make a little difference.
Okay.
From my perspective, it isn't how you react to it, and it isn't what people do. It's your perception of people's actions and events that is 100% of your life.
Okay.
It's all about perception. All the perceptions are based on the filters that you've been given or the beliefs that you have. But if you have a perception about something, you will always see it that way, whether it's accurate or not. What people do is irrelevant. It's what you know inside yourself to be true and your perceptions of it. After your perceptions are your reactions.
Yeah. Well, so then, okay, I'll go another quote. Perception is reality, right?
Yes,
and
I'll go with that one.
Yeah. I guess a quick story to share with you on that. Years ago, I was in a graduate course at Temple University, and it was a group dynamics class. And the professor came in to the first day and said, "We're all going to sit around a circle, and this is the last time you're going to hear me talk the rest of the semester. And there's another class that's observing you behind this two-way mirror, et cetera. So and to wrap it up real quick, we sat around in a circle, and you could talk about anything you wanted. I'd talk about the Phillies or whatever because that was fall time. And then someone said something, and someone misunderstood it, took it as an attack when it wasn't, and the rest of the semester, the whole conversation was about people, like certain people against other people in the group and other people trying to clarify. So the one person's perception of what was said, the dynamic of the whole class just totally changed, and it was like a little struggle, like a little war, you know, so to speak, a verbal war, the whole semester of, because people misunderstood or not misunderstood, but perceived things in that manner. And
yes.
So it's just amazing. Like you said, your filters and how some people are always on guard for certain things and react certain ways.
Right. And those on guards are unconscious and they're always at the edge. It's always what you're looking for. So even though you know it or not, these on guard attitudes are sitting there just waiting for the right trigger.
Mm. Right. So how do people contact you? Like, what makes them contact you? Because do they realize that they have these issues, the perceptions, or do people say, hey, you need to read this book, you need to talk to Michael? What's the typical way that people, you know, get in touch with you?
It comes from all of those, actually. Some people, it's usually word of mouth, or someone has picked up the book or stumbled upon the websites, and what they do is they know that they've been seeking things and they've tried many things that just aren't quite making it. And they either have heard or have someone who has experienced this change. And we'll say, this isn't magical. It's just a permanent change that works as long as you use the way the system is, so to speak. And the system is basically a foundation that you learn to work with and put into your own style. Mm. And people find out about this, know somebody who's changed. I mean, I've had people experience people who were bipolar, the bipolar ceases, people on many different types of medical conditions, the conditions begin to disappear. People who were financially struggling, all of a sudden they start to make these changes and they end up lasting. And so far as my knowledge of these are 10 plus years that these things have remained permanent. And they just move on, and so this word of mouth kind of gets passes on. They either contact me by phone or through the website.
Mm-hmm. Now, when they read the book, that gives them lots of great information. But they can also work with you and other people, like to really get like dive into this. Can you explain that process to the people that are interested?
Yes. What we do is the book itself is a very simple, quick read, and often its simplicity is overlooked for the depth of understanding. So because of that, we've put together online, or I should say on the phone, classes where you can get more in-depth understanding and experiential practices with it. And there are some people that have been trained in this process, and they facilitate these classes. And this allows them to learn to live the concepts as opposed to just think about them or use them like a structure. It should become more of a natural fluidity. And you'll understand that these concepts are really very simple, simplistic in their value, in their idea. I'm sorry, not their value.
Mm-hmm. Now, like I was asked, I was at I run a Law of Attraction meetup group, and I was there last night, and someone in the beginning said, you know, is using Law of Attraction, is that just like second nature to you? Do you always live it, or you know, is it something that you have to consciously think about? So relating that question to what you're saying, where you're saying, you know, using it and living the concepts, you get the people, your clients, at the point where it is second nature?
Yes, and that's the point. It gets to the point where it's second nature to them, and it really just kind of integrates with their lifestyle, because they see the value in it.
Mm-hmm.
And how that kind of ties into the Law of Attraction is basically as you make the shift in this with your own process and your own life, your frequency, if you will, changes, and by that, the Law of Attraction naturally kicks in.
Mm-hmm. Right, Right. So you're able to, I don't say reprogram, but refocus their thought processes and going from the negative thought processes that they were having before, the perceptions they had before, to the perceptions that are more positive and healthy through your process. How many weeks is your classes?
Class is 6 weeks. It's a six-week, 1 hour on the phone class. And through that process, yes, it does make a shift. And one thing I would like to say, negative from my perspective is simply those things that don't work for you or that are limiting.
Mm-hmm.
And those limiting processes are up to you which ones you'd like to change.
Right. Right. Now, have you seen transformations in people? I know you said you had some people like they look back and they laugh at how they were before, but do you have an example of like someone who went through your process, just one before we wrap up today?
Well, we've had one is I had a self-employed entrepreneur, and they would cycle back and forth from being very successful, and then after a while they would start to decline and they'd hit a slump and they were kind of going on this roller coaster ride. And when we discovered through this process, there were so many belief systems from their parents, from growing up. A lot of the parents were from the Depression era, so they had a lot of those in there. And once we cleared those up, that person went just kind of straight up and hasn't roller coastered. And that would be one of the ones I was saying, as far as I know, for 10 years, and his cycle was every 2 or 3 years, he would go up and down. And at this point, just on a straight arrow up, and he hasn't come down since. So it's been a substantial change for him.
Wow, that's great. Well, Michael, man, half hour went by really quick. I appreciate
sure
you.
Did.
Really, thank you for coming on the show. It's been very enlightening and opening up.